The Big Story is brought to you by Scotiabank. There are few things that make Canadians smile more than memories of recent Winter Olympics. But it wasn't always that way. Once upon a time, Canada was a much smaller part of a much smaller Games. That changed, though, and part of that change was built 30 years ago in the same place that will decide today if it wants to do it again. In the years since Calgary hosted the 1988 Winter Olympics, Canada has gone from a nation desperate for a single gold to routinely topping the podium. So why do so many Calgarians and Canadians 3 decades later oppose another Calgary Olympics? And Canada's not the only country conflicted about hosting an event the world once clamored for either. What has changed? And is the price of hosting a modern Games too high, even in a city where they once changed a country's future? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Stephen Brunt is Canada's best known and best loved, at least here, sports writer. He is the co-host of Primetime Sports and also the co-host of The Lead, a podcast that looks at the intersection of sports and culture. So, Stephen, what is happening in Calgary today?
Well, the people of Calgary are going to be voting in a non-binding plebiscite, although let's put it this way, it's going to bind.
Right.
It's not. This is going to decide whether or not they launch an Olympic bid and revisit the glory that was Calgary 1988.
You were in Calgary in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your first Olympics?
It was my first Olympics.
For who? Who you were covering it for?
For the Globe and Mail. And I was there. My gig was actually not. I kind of wrote a peripheral column, like a column about things around the Games. I covered a little bit of straight sport, but it was more kind of finding wacky or colorful things around the edges of the Games.
Well, what was that Olympics like? And what was the expectations on Canada back then?
First of all, the Winter Games were a lot smaller than they are now.
Yes.
There were far fewer sports than there are now. If you look at what's been added, you know, just things like freestyle skiing or short track, or none of that stuff was part of the game. So it was stretched over 17 days still, but there were a lot of days when not a hell of a lot was going on. So Winter Games were much, much different than the Summer Games and much, much kind of quieter and simpler than they are now. Yeah, in Canadian terms, you know, we hadn't hosted the Olympics. The only other time we'd hosted had been in Montreal in 76.
Right.
You couldn't. It wasn't an era where you could kind of count on Canadians winning gold medals. Like,
yeah.
You know, we hosted in 76 and didn't win a gold medal. So there was, you know, a little bit of that. Will we win a gold medal on home soil? Answer is no.
Yeah.
Again, in 88. And then there were a few kind of, like the big one, I guess, was really Brian Orser in figure skating. Brian Orser versus Brian Boitano, which we all called the Battle of the Bellhops because of the uniforms they wore. Matching bellhop uniforms.
Right.
So there was stuff. There were stories. But it was, it was so different than 2010. You know, such a different vibe than what happened in Vancouver, Whistler 2010, where the expectations were super high and winning was part of it. In Calgary, we were just kind of happy to be there. People were a little embarrassed. There was no snow in Calgary. So as sometimes happens in Calgary in the winter, there was no actual snow. So the opening ceremonies, I'll never forget this, the opening ceremonies were at McMahon Stadium. Because they had no snow, they substituted sand to make it look like snow on television, except it looked like sand.
Right.
The first thing I wrote from those games was a snarky column about, you know, how the opening ceremonies had turned into like a salute to Saudi Arabia, or something along those lines. And I think the Globe lost 45 subscriptions in Calgary.
I was going to say, it must have gone over really well with Calgarians.
Oh, yeah, I got a letter from the publisher saying, well, I did not read the column. I'm told the people are upset. So that kind of kicked off my Olympics.
How far have we come since those Olympics? Because this is why now that we're going to have a plebiscite to see if they'll come back to Calgary. It's totally different now.
It is totally different now. The Vancouver experience was transformative for the country, you know, not just in terms of the Olympics, but I think culturally was transformative in terms of the country. You know, the other thing is that those games, you know, in 1988, Calgary made money on the games because there was a bonanza in TV rights that they just lucked into. And so they made buckets of money on those things. No one makes buckets of money on the Olympics anymore. Very few countries want, especially the Winter Olympics anymore, and you kind of get them almost by default. So that notion of, you know, winning the bid and winning the games and beating out all those other countries, you know, now we're in an environment where, you know, the IOC is kind of looking for people who won't reject it in a plebiscite or a referendum, which has happened, you know, a bunch of places.
What role did the 1988 Olympics in Calgary play in what came later?
You know, it wasn't the great kind of sea change, attitude change. You know, think about leading up to 2010, we had the own the podium thing. We had a ton of money poured in.
Right.
Right. And because money gets you medals. That's absolutely true. So there was that imperative to win. We're not going to be embarrassed. And that really drove 2010, and it, you know, we were beyond way, you know, we got way beyond that. What the legacy of Calgary were the facilities, but really, you know, almost 99% of that is the Oval. You know, again, if you think of Canada as a speed skating country, you know, we certainly became a speed skating power.
We win fistfuls, or at least one plus fistful every Olympics now.
That all comes from the Oval. That all comes from the Oval. You know, it's still there. It's still the fastest track in the world. But if you think of that, you know, well, not just one generation, but what, three generations of speed skaters?
Mm-hmm.
They all came through the Oval. So I think that, to me, is the that's the biggest part of Calgary, is that turned us into a speed skating power, and we are still a speed skating power in the world.
How long ago did the perception of hosting the Winter Olympics start to change?
Well, you know, I think it crept around, certainly with the Summer Games, you know, around Athens, I would say. So that was 2004. Sydney was 2000. Sydney was very successful. But although even there, you know, there were stories about the legacy, the facilities. But I think Athens was the one that really, you know, kind of shocked people because, you know, number one, they almost bankrupted the country to do it, which led, you know, in some ways, you can do a dotted line from that to the world financial crisis in 08. You know, and the Greeks were, you know, they were throwing that thing together at the last minute. They were painting over stuff literally as the game started. And then they ended up with these facilities that were never, ever used again. And, you know, in a country that, you know, I say essentially went broke. So that, you know, but that was over, that was them, right? And I think it was kind of comfortable for us to look at them and say, well, that's, you know, they should never have done that. What were they thinking? But, you know, really since then, you know, 2006 Turin, maybe not so much, with winter games and winter sports places up in the mountains in Turin. You know, Sochi was ridiculous and decadent, and everybody understood there was no accountability for the amount of money that was spent.
Yeah.
I would think every Olympics since Athens has been viewed as, you know, kind of with far more of a kind of a cost-benefit analysis, especially after the fact.
Up next.
So if you got the Norway's turning it down, you know, and you have skepticism in places like Sweden, you know, the Italian bid is kind of fragmented now.
And that's it. It's just Italy, Sweden, and Calgary.
Where are you going to go? Right? Like that's, you can't put every Olympics in China.
You can save like never before with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. And now, for a limited time, you can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th. You can find all the terms and conditions at scotiabank.com/MP. How do you balance that as a guy who spent his career watching sports? And we all get caught up during the Olympics in what it means to root for our country and how amazing it feels when we win medals. How do you balance that in between Olympics with the legacy of so many of these games now, which is debt?
Well, it's tricky because I have a foot on both sides, as you say. Like, I've talked to folks in Calgary about this in the last few weeks. There is an intangible benefit, however you want to codify it or quantify it. There is an emotional benefit from hosting an Olympic Games. It is it's a magnificent 17 days. Pride and national pride can be positive, net positives, you know, not necessarily in the world right now when it turns toxic nationalism. But I think there's such a thing as healthy national pride. I think what Canada experienced in 2010 was a good thing for the country.
There's no doubt. Yeah.
And it creates, you know, a sense of community. Community is important. If sports does anything, you know, to the non-participants, for the spectator, it's that it creates temporary or permanent communities, gives people a chance to do something collectively. You know, there are not that many opportunities for kind of collective caring and collective passion in the world anymore. And, you know, there just aren't. You know, people don't gather in town squares for necessarily, or in churches, or, you know, where are the kind of moments of collective caring? You know, I think sport gives you that. And I think that's good, right? I think that's a good thing. That's what you're getting, okay? That's what you're getting. The money, there is no way to justify it economically. You can use it as cover to get things you want, like they did in Vancouver. So you get the Sea to Sky Highway, you get the SkyTrain to the airport. That gets paid for out of your pocket, but you got the political cover. So,
right.
You
know, this is why we need it, we have it.
And now we have it, right? And maybe that's fine, right? You get facilities, you get some legacy facilities in sport that people wouldn't build, the government would never build straight up. You know, we got even the Pan Am Games in Toronto, right? The pool, and there's some things that came out of that which would never have been built. But in terms of the bottom line, you're going to get shafted. It's a bad investment of public money economically. From a straight up, it's the same as building arenas for professional sport or stadiums for professional sport. All of those things they tell you about multiplier effects and 10-to-1 value, it's all crap.
Yeah.
You know, like talk to any economist about that. It sucks money out of your economy as much as it puts money into your economy. You get some short-term kind of construction jobs and things like that, but you are essentially writing a blank check in terms of things like security, because no one can actually tell you how much that's going to cost, and especially no one can tell you how much it's going to cost off into the future.
Yeah, it seems impossible to determine, we're going to pay $150 million for security in 2026 when the world geopolitical climate changes like 2 days.
And that's why there's all that suspicion in Calgary right now, because they fiddled the budget at the last minute, like presto changeo. Like, we're going to knock off, $200 million here. We're going to just take a little here. Clearly, people are just making that up.
Does everybody in Calgary know that when you talk to people out there? Are they just assuming that, like, the check is blank if we say yes?
Well, there are true believers, obviously, who and people who remember 88 in that city and what a great time it was. And there are people who maybe believe some of that economic stuff, maybe a little more. And, look, Alberta's going through a tough time right now, right? High unemployment, crazy retail vacancy rate in Calgary. It's not the oil boom town it was once upon a time.
But do people believe that the games will bring some of that back?
Some do. Some do, bring back some of the shine, the kind of the world-class city thing. There are people who believe that. But there's a lot of skepticism, cynicism. I think those things, that kind of makes it sound like it's irrational, but it's rational. And I'll tell you the other thing. I was talking to the Calgary guys about this last week. I wonder if they had thrown some more goodies in. Like, obviously this is a frugal Olympic bid, right? It's about using, reusing facilities, and there's no train to the airport, and there's no arena for the Flames. If they'd thrown some of that stuff in and said, this is going to cost this much more, but here's what you're going to get, I wonder if it would have been an easier sell. Because part of the problem right now is people look at this and say, well, what are we getting out of this? And Vancouver got all those goodies. What about us? And they're going to get a 5,000-seat arena that no one thinks they need, and a slightly refurbished stadium, and it's not that sexy. And I know it might have been worth kind of going out there and saying, here are the goodies. You're going to pay for them, but this is the only way you're going to get them, and you get the Olympics as well.
There's only two other cities left in the bidding process.
Mm-hmm.
Are we in a situation now where if Calgary says yes and the bid goes ahead, this is kind of an Olympics by default, maybe?
Yep. Well, look, the Winter Olympics are a tough sell now. You've got a limited pool of countries that can or will stage them just because of climate and because of interest in these sports. So it's a much smaller pool than you have for the summer games. And we've had countries like, when Norway turned down the games, like I was in Lillehammer in 94, like that's the best, most perfect Olympic games I've ever attended. It was beautiful. And, people actually do those sports there and care about those sports. And they skied to watch skiing and went on little sleds to watch. Like, it was like a fairy tale. And they turned it down in a plebiscite, the Oslo bid. The people said it's not worth it. So if you got the Norway's turning it down, and you have skepticism in places like Sweden, the Italian bid is kind of fragmented now.
And that's it. It's just Italy, Sweden, and Calgary.
Where are you going to go, right? Like, you can't put every Olympics in China.
Those are the only countries that seem to really want it now.
Yeah. Well, countries that don't have to be accountable, it's easier.
Because it's just a pageant at that point.
Yeah, it's a big pageant. It's a big propaganda exercise. You can set off a bunch of fireworks and you don't have to account for the bill. Yeah, you could have every games in Beijing or Sochi. That would work. They'd pay for them.
Would the Olympics still matter if it turned into that? Doesn't a big part of the prestige of the Olympics involve it being something that the whole world wants to host and that we should clamor to have in our city because it brings the world together? And if it's like, well, here's the few guys that are left, doesn't it lose its attractiveness?
Yeah, I wonder, it's funny. Yeah, you're right. I think it moving around, and this is a chance to have a look in on, on Norway or on Greece or on Australia or those moments, for certainly part of the attraction watching the games. But I was thinking this watching the last Winter Games from Pyeongchang. Like, you think they got a lot of bang for their buck out of that? Maybe it's partially the way they're being covered now, too, that there are fewer people covering them. There are fewer resources in some ways being devoted to the kind of the cultural aspects of the coverage, that you don't feel like you're there and maybe you're not seeing or hearing those stories
and
as much.
And people are writing more about the finances and geopolitics of it.
True, yes. So both in, you're both doing, on one hand, you're probably not drilling down as much as you would into the culture. The other thing is you're pulling back the curtain and demystifying it, turning it into a bottom line discussion, which is, it should be a bottom line discussion. And again, it's hard not to be like,
we sound really cynical sitting
but
here.
It's, and I say that as someone who, again, I got swept away in Vancouver. Like, I've never been swept away covering anything.
Yeah.
I was a giddy, ridiculous person in the crowds of thousands of other giddy, ridiculous people walking around.
What's the moment you remember from Vancouver then that made it worth it?
Oh, boy. You know, I can't even boil it down to a moment, I don't think. I think, you know, I was there for 2 weeks before the game started, which were a really negative 2 weeks.
Yes. You know,
the city, everybody in Vancouver was poo-pooing it. The weather was crappy.
They thought it was going to be horrible. Yeah, there was a fatal accident.
Yeah, and everybody's talking about renting their houses and getting the hell out of town. And, you know, and then there was the accident at the Luge track. I remember the day that the moment that happened, being in one of our places in the broadcast center, and two of our folks were watching the practices on TV, the feed, and the snow was melting at Cypress, and, you know, they had a chain link fence around the cauldron, which everybody hated, and, you know, and then remember even the opening ceremonies, remember one of the big arms didn't work, and
yep.
Then they ran Wayne Gretzky down to the thing in a pickup truck, and people thought that was kind of cheesy, and
we all thought it was going to be a waste of time.
Yeah, we're all going to embarrass ourselves, and then maybe Alex Bilodeau, you know, maybe the gold medal, maybe that is when it started to change, that, yeah, you know, we won one. And it was great, and he's such a great story. Maybe that kind of set things in motion. But, boy, like, I'll tell you, the hockey gold medal, by the time it happened, was purely a cherry on the top. Like, everything, it had already happened by the time that happened. And, you can just kind of tick off. You know, I can still remember pretty vividly a lot of stuff during those games that it was a great and I know that you didn't have to be in Vancouver to feel that. I know. From talking to people who were in every part of this country that it felt the same no matter where you were.
So how different is the conversation me and you are having now about whether Calgary should host these or not from the conversation in Vancouver the 2 weeks leading up to it before we realize, oh, you know what? This was worth it. My heart is full.
I think we're many miles down the road in terms of how people view Olympic bids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference. You're like, around the time Vancouver won the bid, Vancouver Whistler won the bid, I'm sure there was some carping, but I don't remember. Well, there was no plebiscite for one thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there was some skepticism around it. You know, I think this is a slightly different vibe. Like that other vibe I've experienced before Olympics in other places, that's not just a Canadian thing. There's and people have been, you know, it's been construction for 8 years and they've been, you know, it's just been a hassle. It's a hassle until the curtain goes up, right? Yeah. And then everybody, and it always kicks in. It's a beautiful formula. It works. It's brilliant. You know, the ceremony, the everything that the IOC, you know, they stole some of it from the Nazis, which is kind of unfortunate. But, you know, that whole, the torch relay, all that stuff works.
Yeah.
It really works. It's like, it's the most surefire emotional. It's like the big curtain closer at the end of the first act of a Broadway show, right? You know it's going to work, right?
And it brings the whole world together.
Yep.
And everybody's watching the same thing for once.
Yeah, I'm willing to go with that when it happens, and I'm sure if it happens in Calgary, our hearts will be beating when they play the anthem, and everybody will feel great. I'm just not sure we're going to get there. I'm really not sure we're going to get there.
What's your gut feeling on what happens in Calgary today?
People there tell me. Well, put it this way: people on the Olympic side tell me it's going to pass. I think that divide on the city council is very indicative of where the city is right now. Now, having Nenshi out there pumping for it is not insignificant, and he's still a pretty popular mayor in that city. My guess is that it will pass narrowly, but I would not be surprised if it does not. And if, you know, even if it passes narrowly, I think there's going to be a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered between now and the time we get to, you know, for this thing to turn into an actual bid.
Thanks, Stephen.
Hey, my pleasure.
Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet.ca, Primetime Sports, and The Lead, available wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotiabank. You can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. Conditions apply. For more from us, thebigstorypodcast.ca is the place to go, or frequencypodcastnetwork.com if you want to check out our other shows too. You can always catch us on social media at Big Story Podcast, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and we are wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, etc. Hit us up, rate, review, tell your friends. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.